Okay, the topic of scarce resources is not the cutting edge of medicine. Obviously, this has been discussed many times, even in older generations. It became an issue because of the enormous advancement in medical science. And that created scarcity both in funding, in equipment, in healthcare facilities, in time, and in manpower. So it's not always money. Usually people associate scarce resources with budgeting. But for instance, if we have a shortage in organs to transplant to save people, that is a scarce resource that we have to allocate to whoever we are giving it, although on the list there are many more people, and it's not a matter of money. It's just a shortage of the kidney, of the heart, of the liver that needs to be transplanted. If we have six ICU beds and there are seven people who need an ICU bed, at the moment it is not the money that is prohibiting, but it is the lack of the bed or the lack of enough physicians to take care. If there is a mass casualty event and there are only so many physicians and medics on the spot, it again is not a money issue, it is how many people can deal with so many casualties at the same time. So these are a variety of issues that present the dilemma of scarce resources. And it became much more enhanced in modern medicine because people are living longer, but unfortunately not always better, so that there are debilitating disabilities, old age. Neonatology has advanced tremendously, but has created a lot of babies who are prematurely born, surviving, but with a lot of disabilities. All these create a big burden on society to take care of. Obviously, the money talks as well, and today we have many, many very expensive modalities, both of treatment and of diagnostics, and both are very costly, and there's certainly not sufficient money to give it to everyone. And if we are talking about research projects, which are very important, because without research we will not get the advancements we want to get, these are very, very costly. And again, the question is, should we limit research in order to transfer money to actual treatment, or should we allot money for research in order to be able, for the next time, to save people? Oops. So, the fact is that there is no country in the world, even your neighbor in the south and many other powerful and rich countries, that can provide all medical needs for all citizens. That's a given. No one can do it. And therefore, we have an economic issue, how to allocate the limited resources most beneficially, and an ethical issue, how to allocate these limited resources in a more suitable, equitable, and just manner. So in the past, when the treatment and diagnostic options were very, very limited, there were hardly questions of allocation of resources, because there was enough to give to everyone who was in need. The question was only, is it beneficial? Nevertheless, we know the famous discussion in the Gemara that two people go in the desert and there is only sufficient water for one. What do you do in this condition? How do you allocate the water in order to save the two people, or to give up on one and save the other one? These types of questions, obviously, today don't appear at all. And I want to point out already, and I won't discuss this issue, although it's a very interesting halachic debate between Rabbi Akiva and Ben Torah, because it is irrelevant on a fundamental basis to the issues we are dealing with. And the irrelevancy is because there the water belongs to one of the people who are in need of the water. Whereas today, there is no such thing. The allocating resources comes from a third party, comes from society, comes from research institutes, comes from hospitals, comes from governments, but the people who are in need are equally in need, and they don't possess the resource that they are in need of, and hence it is not a relevant source to discuss it halakhically, although some try to bring some analogy, but I think this fundamental difference takes out this option from the discussion. So nowadays, it is not enough to say that there is something that can save a person. We have to add a question: can we afford to give this measurement to this particular person because it will come on the account of someone else? So how do you prioritize, how do you allocate the resource? Also, there is another Talmudic source known in Masechet Horayot that gives priority of treatments between people who are drowning or need to be saved from captivity. And the question is, who do we save first? That again is not relevant to the discussion of today, because there it is a question of triage on an individual compared to other individuals at the same spot. Here we are talking about a policy of allocating resources as a government, as a hospital, as a society, which has different calculations and different perspectives, and therefore will try to go only on those issues, and the triage of a particular person is a separate issue. So as a rule, in situation of poor health, a small investment can produce significant benefits. So that if, for instance, people are suffering from a contagious disease, from pneumonia or from UTIs, so supplying enough antibiotics will solve the problem, and the small investment of antibiotics can produce a significant benefit to many. And indeed, in poor nations, serious problems of hunger, unemployment, lack of housing, and population explosion are added problems to the medical needs, and the medical needs per se are a small part of allocating resources because there are many more serious societal problems. On the other hand, in situations of high health standards, large investments may produce little benefit. So for instance, diseases that are called orphan diseases, which are rare diseases, and those people who are afflicted with those rare diseases are dying or suffering terribly. In order to save them, we have to invest millions, companies have to invest millions to provide a medication so that a person can need $1 million a year to save one life or five lives because it's such a rare disease. So the investment is very high, but from a societal point of view, it gives a relatively little benefit. So in developed countries, people seek very high and expensive standard of living, hence medical expenses are only a small portion of the total societal needs. We want luxurious cars and luxurious homes and trips and all kinds of quality of life measures, so that the expenses for medicine are only a part of a very high standard of living, which again puts the whole perspective of scarce resources for medical purposes into a much larger proportion. So from an ideal moral solution, if we would go with what is regarded as a moral dictum of absolute equality, so the fundamental right of every citizen to receive every beneficial medical treatment should be in accordance with his medical situation. I don't care if I am in need of a very expensive diagnostic measure or treatment to the fact that when I will get it, someone else will lose it. If I need it, that is what you should give it to me. Now, from a societal point of view, it is absolutely impossible, and therefore in real life, absolute equality is impossible due to limited resources, high demands, and other societal needs, and therefore a society must find a way of rationing and allocating resources according to rules and regulations which will affect individuals that they will not receive the equal treatment per need as would be the right thing from a moral standpoint. So if we want to consider what do we take into account when we as society try to ration limited resources. So there are measures that are life savings, and there are measures that are life prolonging. If the choice is between allocating resources for a medication that is a life-saving procedure, and at the same time someone needs a new medication that will only prolong life but won't save his life, then life-saving measures should take priority because that is more important than just prolonging life. Vital and necessary treatments should take precedence over just better quality of life and certainly luxurious. If we can choose between a cheap and an expensive measure, we should choose the cheap one. And if we do research, applied research, which can benefit directly people, should take precedence over theoretical research. Now, that is not to say that we should never use our resources for life-prolonging measures or for just better quality of life measures. It only says that if we have the choice and we have no other choice but to choose between two types of medications or of modalities, then this is how we should do it. In Israel, there is a universal coverage for every citizen, which gives a basic basket of treatments that everyone is equally alleged to get it because there is a basic equality between all citizens. However, every year there is a committee for the basket of treatments because of new treatments and new modalities. And they have to decide on a limited budget, 300 million shekel they get in order to introduce new equal resources for treatments, but the budget, but the treatments that they are offered to give to patients as new can be 3 billion shekel. And they have to choose in their limited budget that they have which treatments will they approve to become universal. Obviously, everyone who has the money and has the resources personally and privately can do it. But if the country has to supply it, if society has to supply it, we need to choose, and these are really heartbreaking decisions that the committee of the basket is taking every year. There are demonstrations of patients who say, why shouldn't you put this? Because we are going to die otherwise and we don't have the funding to do it, but there is a limit to it. So these are some of the rules that we are using. So on a practical level, if you want to, if you have to, and you have to ration resources because they are not enough, you have to do a universal coverage for all citizens, which must be clear, transparent, and justified to the citizens, because if it is done under the table, so people become very upset, and rightfully so, the basic healthcare insurance has to be universal, covering all citizens without discrimination. The medical coverage should be comprehensive, including not only drugs and hospitalization, but also psychiatric, geriatric, dental, and preventive services, which obviously is an added burden on the societal budget. The system of payment should be fair and progressive. The poor should pay less to the pool in order to get more if they are entitled to get it than the rich. The healthcare system should include measures for cost containment. And today, I think in many medical schools, there is a course on medical economy so that students in medical schools already learn that they can use a cheaper drug, which will be as effective as a more expensive one, and yet on the budget, it will make a big change, and it ought to be satisfactory to the patients and healthcare providers. I want just to draw an attention on a specific problem that we just now facing in Shaharet Tzedek, Laniato, in hospitals that go according to halacha. If we talk about equality, in Israel, fertility technologies are provided for free up to 2 children, no matter how many cycles are involved until 2 children are born. And that is a huge expense on the budget of the country, but that is something that it's universal and everyone is entitled to it. In the religiously based hospitals, there is a limitation to who it is provided. And the limitation is to couples who are halachically married. It is not done for single women, or certainly not for gay people, or for people who are not halachically married. And it is not done even for those who live together but are not halachically married. And that has been recently challenged in the court, claiming that the hospital gets funding from the government, it's a public hospital, and if we talk about equality, how can you ration the allocation of this resource based on a halachic discrimination? And it's a big debate how do you justify it so that the courts will agree, the public will agree, and the hospitals will live with their own way of doing it. Same holds true for abortion. Abortion is a resource, it costs money, it costs hospitalization sometimes, and that has to be given to every woman in this case who is pregnant, provided there is a legal reason to perform the abortion. The legal reasons in Israel are much beyond the halachic reasons that allow abortion. So in the religious hospitals, we limit the abortion permission and performance based on halacha. And again, it has been challenged. How can you do it? What do you care if I need an abortion and by law I'm entitled and the government pays you money to keep your hospital so that it will serve equally to all citizens? That is an issue that has to be dealt with. So I'm just giving you an example of allocation of resources from a different angle that is specific to such hospitals. So what are the halachic sources that we can deal with this issue? So the most famous source discussing it is the Talmudic, the Mishnah in Gittin, and the Gemara based on this Mishnah. The Mishnah says, "Ein podim et hashvuim yeter al kdet mehe b'pnei tikkun ha'olam," meaning that one is not allowed to redeem a Jewish captive more than he is worth, or whatever the calculation is, "mipnei tikkun ha'olam," for the good of society. And the question is, what tikkun olam is it to limit the amount that the captives want for the redeeming of the Jew that they caught? So there are two explanations in the Gemara why we shouldn't pay as much as they ask, but we should pay only what is reasonable, what is worth this person. One is mishum duchka de tzibura, which means that the public should not be impoverished by paying so much ransom. And the other one is, in order not to get the kidnappers, the tithe, the will to do it again, because they may feel that it's worthwhile doing it. We ask so much money, we'll do it again, and if we don't pay them, hopefully they won't do it again. So these are two very different explanations on why not to pay the amount that is required, but only a certain amount of it. And that led to many sub-questions, which some lead to what we are dealing with. So if we would accept that the halachic reason for not redeeming the captives for more than what they are worth, because we don't want them to do it again and again, then it's irrelevant to our discussion. We are talking about scarce resources. This is a separate issue. We don't want the kidnappers to do it again and again. But if we would accept that the halachic reason is not to impoverish society, that means that we know that there are scarce resources. Society needs the money not only in order to redeem captives, but for other reasons as well. And therefore, even if the captive will not be redeemed, we can't pay it because we need the money for other sources. So that is still a debate. How do we paskin, how do we rule on those two sides of the explanation? Many do rule that it is indeed because of impoverishing society. Now the difference will be that if a private person, let's say a woman was taken captive, and the husband has a lot of money, and he's willing to pay as much as the kidnappers want, if it is because impoverishment of society, that won't affect society. He is paying from his own pocket, so he can pay as much as he wants. If the reason is in order not to have the kidnappers do it again, then it doesn't matter if a private person does it or society does it, he will have the will to do it again, and then even a husband will not be allowed to do it. So that is one difference. The other issue is, how bad is the situation of the captive? Is he there on reasonable conditions, and if the kidnappers will know that nothing will help and they'll have to release him, so they'll release him even if we don't pay them enough. But if his life is in danger, if the kidnappers say, if you don't pay us the full amount, we'll kill him, is it still permissible to say that society has the right not to be impoverished and not to pay so much? And that is a serious debate. And if we would accept that even in this case, society has a right to ration her expenses, that will be very appropriate to our discussion. Because let's say that we have a certain amount of money. Let's say I am the director of the hospital and I get a certain budget. I can divide the budget in building an intensive care unit, which is in order to save lives directly, and I'll put there 8 beds. But with the rest of the money, I'll put a preventive medicine department, an educational department, a nice building for recreation of the staff, a nice garden of the hospital. I have all kinds of expenses as a director of the hospital. If life-saving takes always precedence, even if impoverishment is the case, then I have to build 20 beds of ICU and not spend a dime on education and on gardening, because I need all the money to save life. So most poskim hold that even in case that it may cause the life of certain people, I am still allowed to use some of my resources for other matters which are societal needs. Because at the end, society needs to live in a certain level, and there's no way that we can take away all the money just for direct life saving. And B, even if you spend all your money on it, it still will not be enough. Even if you have 20 beds, then tomorrow you'll need 21 beds and 22 beds, and there's no end. So in fact, what we do today is we do take in account the needs of society, even if, because of it, someone will die in the end. The only limitation to this rule is that currently I can't make the change. So if, for instance, I have now 8 beds of ICU and all the beds are occupied by people who need the ICU, and I decide that I need to open now a dermatology unit, but I don't have money. The only way to open it is to reduce a bed of the ICU and transfer it to dermatology. That would mean that a patient who is now in the 8th bed will die. That I can't do. But if a priori I planned it that there will be only 8 beds and there will be a department of dermatology, and now comes the 9th patient and he doesn't have a bed, and even if it means that he will die, I don't need to change my policy. And that is really how things are operating, and that is based in part on the second source, which is relevant to our discussion, and that is Sugya in Nedarim, where there is a source of water on top of the hill, and close to the source of the water is one town, and down of the hill there's another town. Now both need the water that comes from this well. So those who are close to the well have priority to take the water when it comes to them. So certainly if they need it in order to drink, which is to survive, they have a priority over the next city who is further away, who will not get this amount of water. But according to Rabbi Yossi, which the poskim hold that this is the halacha, the first city is allowed to use the water not only for drinking, but also for washing their clothing. Because if they won't wash their clothing, they may be infected, and in the long run, they may die. And therefore, this is an extended way of a need to survive of the first on the account of the second ones. So if we say that it means that they will take all the water, partly to drink and partly to wash their clothing, and that would mean that the next city will die because they won't get water, that is one way to interpret it. And that again, if we take this interpretation, our policy of allocating resources in a way that not all the budget goes to life-saving procedures, and we do spare some of the budget to less important things, but that are needed to society, that would be on that explanation. But if we go on a different explanation, which says that the second city indeed needs the water from the upper hill, but not to a degree that if they won't get it, they will die, because there is further away another source of water. It is only for their convenience and maybe a little bit of a remote life-saving procedure until they get to the further away source of water. Then again, the question will be, is society allowed to limit the resources for life-saving procedures in order to allocate money for other needs? So bottom line, and that's the way we live and that's the way we operate, we prefer to allocate the scarce resources for life-saving procedures, but we are not obligated to turn all the budget only to life-saving procedures. Society needs other measures. Society needs to live in a way that society is used to live, and therefore part of the money is allowed to go to different purposes. So you can start from the government. The government has a budget, and there is a ministry of health, and there's a ministry of defense. These are life-saving ministries. They need a lot of money, but they don't get all the money. Some of the money goes to culture, to sports. I think goes too much to sports, but that's a different story. and all kinds of roads and gardens and so on. That's how the government does it. Now, the government allocated some of the money to the Ministry of Health. The Ministry of Health now has to allocate a lot of money to life-saving procedures, to build hospitals that are acute care for dangerous diseases, but the Ministry of Health can also allocate for education, for gardening, for other things that they need. Some of this money comes to the hospital. The director of the hospital, again, should allocate enough money for life-saving procedures, ICUs, surgeries, nurseries, and so on, but also some money for psychiatry, dermatology, ophthalmology, and things that people not necessarily die, but they need it as part of their living, and that is how we sift it down when we have to allocate resources. So at the end, always it's better to be rich and healthy than be poor and sick, and if we can be all rich and healthy, we wanted to discuss these tragic options. Thank you.